It's an engineering marvel, one of the most famous bits of steelwork in the world. But someone decided to turn Sydney Harbour Bridge into a giant picnic spot. How could they possibly do it without bringing an entire city to a standstill?
The bridge itself is the heart.
The situations that happen on the bridge that are out of your control.
And it all had to happen to a deadline. Did they have any idea what they were taking on? It's pretty spectacular. It doesn't just say Sydney, but Australia too. A national monument, a world icon, but also a vital part of this city's transport network. The bridge is used to being roped in as an awesome backdrop when it's New Year party time.
Sydney's reputation is intact as the New Year's Eve capital of the world.
But then came a plan to put the bridge itself center stage. They call it Breakfast on the Bridge. But they're not just picnicking on a bypass. On October the 10th, 6,000 people showed up to eat breakfast on the world's most extraordinary picnic table. Making this happen took many months, with dedicated task forces working frantically behind the scenes. And exactly how they managed it is an extraordinary story.
It's a huge undertaking, isn't it? And I'd never expected to see real grass. I expected artificial grass. I can't believe it. I think the bridge defines Sydney. There's many of us who believe that, you know, if the bridge didn't exist, it'd be a much different city.
It's bringing the family together, having a day out, enjoying breakfast in the rain. Doesn't get any better, really, does it?
Happy birthday,
Vishree! Absolutely wonderful, best experience ever. It's fantastic, thanks guys.
Typical of the bridge, Sydney, but Bob.
The kids, just the atmosphere. Who cares if it rains? It can rain as much as it wants.
Locals call it the coat hanger. This bridge linking central Sydney with the city's north shore. It's the world's widest long span bridge. Its tallest steel-arched bridge and carries more than 160,000 vehicles and almost 400 trains every day. 5 million commuters cross it each week. Without the bridge, the whole city would grind to a halt. Everyone in Sydney knows that, so to party on the bridge is, if you like, their way of saying thank you.
Well, all of my life I've known it, and I grabbed the opportunity. It's an icon, it's part of our lives, and I guess it's one of those things that every Sydneysider should come and try and do.
It represents connection between people, letting people connect with each other, exactly what's happening over here. I couldn't think of a better place to be having an occasion like this.
The highlight of Sydney's food festival, known as Crave. Breakfast on the Bridge has been a staggering success. Even the rain couldn't dampen their spirits. Now it's time to clean up. And very soon, the organizers can think about relaxing.
Be a couple hours early.
We'll follow three task forces charged with getting the bridge into shape before the October deadline. Preparing for the picnic and giving the 78-year-old structure a major facelift too. With just 10 months to complete the work, it's a monumental challenge. The Transport Management Centre, staffed by Steve and Tom, has to keep traffic running smoothly 24/7.
If something happens on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, then it affects the whole of Sydney. That's what happens.
Their events team is in charge of planning the picnic.
Breakfast on the bridge may seem like a simple idea, but to actually get this event up and running and everything on the bridge is huge.
On bridge renewal and painting, Mirko from the Road Transport Authority, or RTA.
It's not only that somebody will say, oh, it's very easy, it's only go in and paint it. It's not only painting, it's a lot to involve.
And Mirko's son, Joe.
Maintenance on the bridge is a massive job.
And on rail maintenance, RailCorp's Nathan makes sure the overhead power cables run safely, rain or shine, whatever the hazards.
It's hard to get access to the track to do any actual work.
So as the deadline approaches, each team needs a game plan to get their tasks finished, with the bridge still up and running. The Bridges Transport Management Centre, or TMC, coordinates everything from rush hour lane changes to emergency rescue work. This year, they'll also move into a new state-of-the-art control room and orchestrate various planned closures, including the Big Breakfast in October. And they have to do it without compromising safety. RailCorp looks after all the trains which use the bridge. Before October, they need to put in new overhead cables to power brand new rolling stock, replace the timber decking with concrete, and generally keep the railway up to scratch. And the permanent team of painters must strip and repaint 10,000 square meters of the bridge without polluting the harbour below them. No one said it would be easy. So are they up to this monumental challenge? Rush hour on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And thousands of people prepare to cross the bridge by train. Behind the scenes, the 300 staff who work for RailCorp. This year, they've planned 4 two-day shutdowns, known as possessions. These will ensure that almost 3,000 trains a week can continue to cross the bridge safely and will allow critical repairs to the structure, wiring, cable, and track. For Nathan Hofmeister, chief engineer for overhead power cables, and his colleague Hassan, these closures are a finely honed mission. During this possession, they have just 48 hours to replace 2 main overhead power structure points, and there's no room for error.
We got to disconnect both structures and replace them in the same spot.
Yep.
Anwire is our priority for Monday morning to get ready.
Yep.
The second one's going to be Risto's work. We've got to disconnect the span wires.
Okay.
The plan, of course, is to stick to the timetable like clockwork. Whether they do it or not is another question. As Sydney grew into one of Australia's greatest cities, something rapidly became clear. There had to be a way of spanning the harbour, linking the city centre with the North Shore. Erasmus Darwin, grandfather of the famous naturalist Charles Darwin, suggested a bridge in 1791. No one listened. Ferries appeared in 1830. Within 50 years, they were already struggling to cope. Perhaps old Mr. Darwin had been right all along. Then in 1891, John Bradfield joined the New South Wales Department of Public Works. And he's known to this day as the father of the bridge. Under the bridge, Mirko and his team are gearing up for their own challenge. 60-year-old Mirko Seravac has 17 years' experience as a specialist bridge painter.
Do a good job.
Number one crewmate.
Mirko supervises the 10-man team that will be painting 10,000 square metres of the bridge this year in 4 stages. A key member of Mirko's team is Joe, his 31-year-old son. He's been working here for 10 years already.
That inspires me a lot, working on the Harbour Bridge and being an icon, like I said, I really enjoy it. Of course I'm proud of my dad working here with me because, you know, the father and son team gives me the right advice most of the times. And yeah, coming to work together, I'm proud, of course.
Like everyone who works on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, they're on a tight deadline. But for Mirko and his team, this looks more like a mission to Mars than a paint job. Painting makes it sound much too easy. What they do is a critical part of the maintenance regime. They have to strip the bridge of many layers of old, highly toxic, lead-based paint. And replace it with new, eco-friendly paint that will last 25 years. First, they need to put up sealed painting stages down below. This takes 10 days, but we'll make sure the paint doesn't go where it shouldn't. Zero hour. Everyone must don a special safety suit, complete with breathing apparatus, to protect from poisonous fumes.
Blasting it, mate?
Did you put all the slings on the hoses?
Whenever you're ready to blast?
Yeah.
Let me know, yeah.
I'll let you know if you're ready.
Yeah.
Okay. And as the curtains are raised so that work can begin, Mirko and his supervisor, Waruna, are on full alert.
We put a double curtains in
there.
They protect the noise protect, in case if you make one damage, the second one, they protect any emission that come in here.
I don't want any emissions, right?
No, definitely
I don't want any emissions here,
no,
right? Make sure that everything is 100% sealed,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
The team certainly has their work cut out. Beginning at the south pylon by the water's edge, they'll move slowly towards the southwest end of the bridge.
I think that's an interesting thing.
This one piece will make 52 layers.
Watch on mobile devices or the big screen. All for free. No subscription required.
But this world-famous structure could have ended up looking very different. In 1903, Norman Self submitted a winning design that relied on an artificial island built out into the harbour. But a change in government meant that the project was dropped until the end of World War I. A new competition in 1921 brought entries from all over the world. The bridge eventually combined the design concepts of several different people, but the most important was attributed to John Bradfield. After seeing New York's Hellgate Arch, he insisted on an arched rather than a cantilever or horizontally projected bridge. It would look better and save money. English firm Dorman Long & Company won the prestigious building contract. The bridge opened in 1932. Total cost, £10 million. And so traffic's been flowing here for 78 years, not always smoothly.
Here we have a westbound incident, Carl Expressway before the tunnel, westbound incident 2. There's roadworks, southbound incidents, different areas of the bridge.
Steve Howey has been working at the Transport Management Centre, or TMC, for 32 years.
The one thing about it, with a peak hour, it goes really quick, because there are so many things happening. As you come in early in the morning, you start early, you get your cup of coffee, you sit down, and let's go.
It's a tough job, with an average of 5 to 10 incidents a day.
For me to do my job to the best of my ability, I have to remain calm. The situations that happen on the bridge that are out of your control, so you can just best deal with what's around.
Tom's a supervisor, sharing the heavy workload.
4, 5 and 6 are out.
Working closely with him, interacting with him all the time. We've got all the cameras up there on the bridge, which I can watch and which he can watch. If any incident happens, he alerts me of it straight away, because we know what a major impact it can have on the rest of the Sydney Road network. And I work in closely with him, and if there's anything that he needs that he hasn't got at hand, any other resource that I can supply, like a helicopter if it was possible, then I can do that to assist.
Even a minor incident can have a big knock-on effect.
If something happens on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, then it affects the whole of Sydney. That's what happens. It has the potential to impact all of Sydney. because it's such a critical crossing port. We've only got about 7 crossing points to the whole of the harbour.
Tom has 2 jobs on his plate. Alongside day-to-day traffic management, they're all about to move to a new state-of-the-art HQ. They need to make the move with minimum traffic disruption and, always, maximum safety.
What we've got to do is make sure that the other room is, first of all, make sure that it's completed. The week before we move, myself and another chief traffic controller will actually test all the computer programs to make sure they work, to make sure that they're all up and running and they can do everything that we need to do. We'll do that on every separate console to make sure that they work. However, you won't know if they all work under full load when every console is being operated at the same time.
They can't afford to get it wrong. As Tom looks to the future, at midnight, the Rail Corp team are waiting for the final day's train to depart so they can shut the line down, take possession. It's going to be a long night.
Okay, right to take possession of the up and down shorelines between North Sydney and Central. This section is clear of rail traffic.
Hello, trouble. Okay, so on authority, 627/10, I've got clearance to remove supply between Argyle and Waverton.
The switch is thrown, but there's already a problem.
They've got a train stuck in a section. They're not going to grant us possession on time.
Nathan and his team are behind schedule before they've even started. So how are they going to hit their deadline? Midnight on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, and urgent work on the train lines is off to a slow start. They've only got 48 hours to do all the work they need. The clock's ticking. Nathan has to make some tough decisions.
We're a bit behind. We're going to have to prioritise our work and attack our critical ones on the down track.
Nathan has to come up with plan B.
Make sure we get done. There's 2 left on the main.
If we don't complete our 3 critical locations, we won't be able to run wire in the following possession. If we don't get that reconnected by tomorrow afternoon, trains won't be able to run Monday morning.
It's too late to reverse some of the work they've already begun. So finishing the wiring job becomes top priority.
All the rivets have been taken out of the ones we've got to do.
And as Nathan and his team wrestle with their problem, the traffic management team are also having a busy night.
We've also got works on the Sydney Harbour Bridge tonight, where there's 3 lanes of the 8 lanes closed on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. That won't happen, I think, until about 11 o'clock.
And while Tom plans future roadworks closures, Steve's concerned with the here and now.
Now, I've decided to do a lane change to give an extra lane of traffic from the city to the north. And we really want traffic to get in there as quick as possible, because the more it stays empty, the more dangerous it is. And this will funnel people up into that lane north. They're like sheep. As soon as one goes, the rest tend to follow.
Yeah, copy that, Tango 5.
His colleague Ian hears the immediate effect of the successful lane change.
Hear the speed of the traffic? It's pumping.
Ian Matthews mans the TMC's office on the bridge.
It's like the blood. The bridge itself is the heart. With all these blockages, they're not going to work. So we're going to get the blood pumping again.
Tom and Steve rely on him to keep things moving on the ground.
People want to move. Nobody wants to sit still driving in their car. If I can do a little bit to keep it moving, that's me. That's what I want.
And while traffic flows across the bridge, the TMC's Brandon McNally is getting his head around breakfast on the bridge.
Breakfast on the bridge may seem like a simple idea, but to actually get this event up and running and everything on the bridge is huge.
Brandon's worried about everything from toilets and garbage to the fleet of trucks bringing grass to cover the bridge in turf. They need to learn from last year's mistakes.
If it does come down to from High Street up the north.
The Australian Traffic Network's chopper is an eye in the sky, constantly watching the traffic flow.
I was saying it's very quiet, mate, heading just looking at the bridge approaches out of the city.
you have to keep a close eye on it because Sydney traffic in the matter of minutes can just change. So it's very important that you stay focused and very important that we constantly update on what's happening around town. Linda said when we're flying up in the air, we get the key advantage in the bird's eye view of having a look at the whole scope of what's happening in Sydney's traffic. Good evening, it's Vic LaRusso, and it's a great run out of the city tonight if you're accessing the Harbour Bridge. No problem for the Western Distributor all the way into North Sydney, or if you're heading into the city too from the North Shore, the freeway approaches for the main deck of the Harbour Bridge moving well, and a good run for Military Road.
The chopper is a vital part of today's complex traffic plan. 70 years ago, no one dreamed there'd be this much traffic crossing the bridge. In 1934, exactly 16,988 vehicles used the bridge, paying £619. Now, 10 times as many cars cross every day, raising around $500,000 Australian dollars daily. It's just as well the original design can cope with the modern payload. Bridge historian Caroline McInnes and surveyor Duncan Lees want to explore the secrets of bridge construction using brand new technology.
So, Duncan, you've got some modern survey equipment here. I guess it's very different from the equipment that was used as part of the original bridge construction.
Fundamentally, things really haven't changed that much. These days, everything is in one box, and the laser scanner that I've got here enables us to do the same sort of job that they did. And I think the big difference is that we can collect much more information in a much shorter space of time, something that they'd have probably envied on a project like this.
In the 1920s, the original surveyors had to rely on less high-tech methods.
The survey was done by two teams, the British team and the Australian team.
Any friction in that, I wonder?
It was a very good process, very sound, and it came together. They had to be absolutely precise for the bridge to be built accurately. So the two teams did their own surveys and then compared notes.
Today, Duncan plans to scan the bridge using a laser, recording tens of thousands of survey measurement points per second. His gear can do in weeks what would have taken the original surveyors months.
It is both horizontally and vertically true. The laser rotates around the top here and sends out a laser beam which, when it hits the surface, reflects back to the instrument.
As Duncan's laser starts to pick up survey points accurate to within 6 millimetres, Mirko and his son Joe are approaching the central arch.
How's things going down on the steel platform? Is that
steel platform is going very good. We have a problem with the weather and that, but I said that it's going quiet very well.
Yeah, the ducting is good.
Ducting is work excellent.
That's good.
With the spraying, we do today, there'll be the spraying over there. And I reckon maybe tomorrow we finish all spraying on the steel platform.
The guys call my dad the owner of the bridge because it's like it's his bridge and he just wants to see the best for the Harbour Bridge. So it's a bit of a joke going around that he's the owner of the bridge because he's so passionate about working here.
For Joe, it's far more than just a job of work.
Deadlines are like keeping up with the painters because it all revolves around painting the Harbour Bridge. And if we're lagging behind in the ducting, that slows them down and we don't want that.
While father and son move slowly on, Steve in the traffic team is dreaming of his new control room.
Well, we've been up here now for about 9 months in a rather cramped space. We're looking forward to the new cameras that we're going to have, our new LED screens, the new wall, which has been expanded, and we'll have more screens on it.
From time to time, they need all the help they can get.
I remember one time when I was over on the bridge, it was a really bad stormy night. It rained that heavily that we had, in a space of an hour, we had 78 breakdowns. And that was just on the Harbour Bridge. Cars were stopped everywhere, it was like a parking lot.
Ian's worst nightmare was the time a crane got stuck. For supervisor Tony, an electrical fire on a train stopped in the middle of the bridge. And for the boss, Phil Akers.
The accidents on the bridge, unfortunately, are a an ongoing occurrence. Normally, it's your rear ender type accident because people aren't paying enough focus on the road. And it's quite common with people travelling over an icon such as the Harbour Bridge. They're looking around and looking at the structure themselves, which is not a good thing to do when you're actually travelling on a major piece of road.
Accidents happen. But it's the TMC's job to cope in every crisis. With tow trucks and other emergency vehicles, they also get information to the public as fast as they can. Even with their best efforts, there are an average of 50 incidents per week. Every one has to be handled swiftly and decisively. The city is depending on it.
Without us at the TMC, I'm certain that traffic wouldn't flow as efficiently as what it does in Sydney. This is the best job I've ever had in my life. It's really because you can actually have an impact straight away on traffic. Yes, it can be very stressful. Yes, it can be frustrating because sometimes you physically can't remove if it's a broken down truck or if it's a smashed truck. But I can certainly have that coordination role and assist anybody out in the field that can do it. And what happens is you get a result every day.
And as Tom and Steve patrol the bridge virtually, Brandon's on the prowl and thinking about breakfast on the bridge. Now it looks like there's nowhere for the trucks carrying the turf to turn. A simple problem which could bring the whole plan crashing down. Winter in Sydney, and breakfast on the bridge is coming up in less than 2 months' time. With 10,000 square metres to be painted, urgent work on the train lines underway, and a major upheaval as the traffic managers move house. Three teams are racing to meet the looming deadline. But the TMC's events coordinator, Brandon, is running out of time. He and colleague Aaron are on a recce. They need to make sure that 11,000 square metres of grass, 50 toilets and 16 flower pots can get onto the bridge fast.
Our choke point last year was around this point. Yep. So hopefully we can alleviate this year with bringing the trucks right down, dropping off at their certain locations. Once they're empty, they'll head down here off the bridge, southern end.
They're in for a long morning.
I'm sure if we increase numbers, we're going to have to put more grass on there. What's your thoughts on that?
Depending on how many more numbers you want to get, you certainly increased it a little bit either side, I'd say.
Getting them off the bridge is keeping...
As Brandon and his colleague get to grips with turfing the bridge, they're standing at its centre.
Three-dimensional points.
And as Caroline and Duncan are discovering, this engineering milestone, with an arch span of 503 metres and a total length of 1,149 metres, was groundbreaking in a number of ways.
At the time, the bridge was the greatest steel arch bridge in the world,
right,
through the combination of its span, its width and its load-bearing capacity.
It must be hugely demanding of resources, both in terms of the sort of the materials involved, but also the number of people working on it.
Sure, it was a massive project and a great employer of workers, particularly during the Depression, because, of course, the bridge started to be constructed after the contract was signed in 1924, and it took 8 years to completion in 1932.
No one had built anything like it before.
I think you get much more understanding of how huge the thing is being here rather than actually on the bridge itself. What sort of quantities of materials are in the bridge then?
There's 52,800 tonnes of steel in the arch and the approach spans. You also have the tonnes of concrete that were used for the pylons. They're faced with granite.
The builders also use their own pioneering technology, creeper cranes.
These were massive cranes that were designed specially, built and tested in England before they were brought out to Australia. And they were actually five cranes in one. They weighed 600 tonnes,
right,
and they were supported on an undercarriage, which was a travelling undercarriage with 16 wheels. And if you can imagine, they were placed on the top cord of the bridge, and then they moved out slowly as each panel was built.
The largest of the cranes could hoist a staggering 120 tons. The arch alone weighed over 39,000 tons and took 2 years to complete. Down below, Mirko and his team are ready to blast.
All right, yeah, everyone's right to go, so just to plug everyone in, please.
Well, you go to the other side. All the face.
No. Finish inside there. So because they have to cover, because they blast there and they, then we get the stuck. Finish it one, all around.
All around? Yeah.
They're on their third section, and they need to finish blasting the old lead-based paint in time for inspection. And if they don't pass, they can't paint.
Make sure you do all around finish. When you do inside and the top and bottom at the same time. Thank you.
What we do now, we do inspection 1 o'clock, and after inspection, we check, make sure it's all done 100% clean blasting. If there's any spot, they have to be reblast, we touch up, and then we start the spraying. Where you blast on the top?
I'll blast the side, this side is finished, and the inside half is finished, and the top is half is finished. I'll have to do from other side.
Yeah, cool.
Whether it's Mirko's keen eye or his shouting, the work is finally done. All spick and span for this inspection.
In the same spot, imagine the photo, 71.
The team's work passes inspection with flying colours.
We've just had our inspection of the blasting from today. The class we try to achieve here is 2.5 class blast. The boys have achieved that. There's a couple of little touch-ups we need to do as per usual. The boys will be in here for about another 5-10 minutes touching up the blasting, and our painters will come in and put the first coat primer.
It's time to paint. At 4 days per coat for 4 coats, using high-tech paint guaranteed for 25 years, this will take 16 days. It looks as though they might just finish in time. Also on time, the TMC.
On the night of the move, we have 2 shifts working. We have one working in our temporary room that we're in now, and then we have another shift working downstairs. And when we know that when we're confident that everything's going to be working, then we'll just shut down the room upstairs.
Sounds simple, but there's plenty that could go wrong.
There are a number of concerns for us. The accommodation of the people in the cramped quarters, ensuring all the systems work smoothly first time up. Because even though we'll be taking a staged approach and moving half of our people at a time, it's still a requirement that the systems are basically on a seamless arrangement for us.
They're going to work a double shift, one team manning the desks whilst a second one shifts and tests the equipment. Then they'll switch over to the new room. It has to go like clockwork.
It might be 5:30 time to change over shifts. You could have 3 or 5 lanes shut on the harbour bridge. You could have chaos everywhere. The person comes in, you tell them exactly what's happening. They say, OK, go home, goodbye. You know the person that's coming here is going to take over and it'll run just the same as when you were there.
Steve and the team are all set. But on the bridge, Duncan has run into a problem.
The biggest problem here we have is of health and safety issues. We can't stand in the roadway, we can't stand on the cycle path, so we're stuck, we're limited to information that we can get from the walkway.
He has to set the scanner with its working range of 150 to 200 metres to scan every 10 metres so that the scans can combine to show the bigger picture. And as it does its work, Duncan and Caroline survey the bridge visually.
When we're down at a distance, the bridge looks deceptively simple, I think. You know, beautiful curving shape, very sinuous. But when you're up close, there's so much more that you can't see from down there. All of the different crisscross steels and the rivets and the bolts. And you can clearly see that all of the elements are just straight pieces.
Paradoxically, although the bridge is arched, every piece of steel in it is straight. The 28 panels were pieced together like a giant model.
If you were to break it down into component pieces, I wonder how many different components there are, or whether each individual bit is like a bespoke piece that's only on the bridge once, if you like.
Look, they were certainly built as component sections, but, you know, with the arch itself, there are 14 equivalent sections on each side, so there'd be two pairs.
14 panels on each side of the harbour, weighing 28,000 tonnes each, were held back by 128 thick steel cables. These ran back into U-shaped tunnels cut into solid rock and lined in concrete. The tension on either side of the arch was only relieved when the two sides met.
Were they always put in at the same time, or did it alternate?
No, in fact, the bridge was built inequally. It started on the southern side,
right,
and they built it quite a long way out before they started the northern side. And the first piece put in was the most difficult. So they tested one side to get that right, and then worked off that basis on the other side.
There was a lot of scepticism about, you know, their ability to get this bridge to meet in the middle at the time. Okay. So it was reported in the paper quite frequently. People were asking the question, will it come together? Will it actually meet?
To celebrate this extraordinary event, they hung the Union Jack on one of the creeper cranes and the Australian flag on the other. But the triumph came at a heavy price. Many of the workers went deaf during the eight-year process, and 16 men lost their lives.
One man actually survived to fall to the water 170 feet, Victor Roy Kelly, a boilermaker.
That's extraordinary.
It's really incredible. He survived apparently because he was a diver and he knew how to hit the water, but even so, was pretty remarkable.
But that's history. Today brings a whole new set of problems. Bad weather has grounded the traffic chopper. And Nathan, refurbishing the rail line, has discovered something nasty. While battling the wind, the team has found damaged timber decking. Put in decades ago, wind and weather constantly take their toll on the timber sections.
And this timber here, the water's slowly starting to get into it, slowly starting to cause the rot. And replacing the timber, that's a bit of a logistical effort. We need to have the rail closure, we need to have the power out, and we've got to have the area excluded, because when they replace a section of the timber, they have to lift out the panel, which then leaves a hole in the deck, which causes an obvious safety issue.
It's dangerous. But the team has an answer. Why not encase the timber in concrete? It sounds simple enough, but high winds will make this a tricky job. And Nathan's not the only person battling the elements. Bad weather and an unforeseen technical hitch means that Mirko and his team of painters are also behind schedule. Overseer Waruna is worried.
So make sure that that curtain is out.
Yep.
And make sure that the two sides and the other side is secured properly, right?
Yep.
And make sure that everything is okay.
Yep.
We need to start right straight away
before
the wind picks up, right? Uh-huh. Otherwise, we are going to lose another day. It can be a very windy day, which people can't work on the platform.
Their deadline means they have to start painting today. There's only one problem. With high winds raging, they've had to stop work. ...4 a.m. on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Painters, traffic controllers and rail engineers have less than 1 month to go before the giant celebration, breakfast on the bridge. But thanks to bad weather, both the painters and the rail engineers are behind schedule. Nathan and his team are racing to complete a long list of repairs during a two-day rail shutdown. They're trying to finish a structural repair, as well as replacing three large steel stanchions, which have not been touched since the bridge was built. Already behind schedule from earlier delays, Nathan's team are losing even more ground.
Currently we're experiencing some high winds out on the bridge. I've had reports of up to about 50 knots. Safety is our first priority with all our work, comes before our production. We're going to have to attack our critical tasks only and pick up the rest of the work later on during some nighttime possessions.
Luckily, they're in for a reprieve.
You got to get that way more.
The wind has died down quite a lot. We can work in the weather at the moment. So we'll try to get as much as we can done before they pick up again, if they do.
They need to make the most of this window.
With the cold weather, the steel contracts, and because we've got to slide the bridge over the leg, it's just come in tight. So it's just a bit tight on it. But they've got one end in, and they've got a bolt in that end, so it's pivoting on that end, and it's just dropping into place now.
There's one more critical item to go. This is our second last critical item.
Against all the odds, they've finished.
The guys behind me are putting up the final piece of critical steelwork we need. It's quite a milestone for us. It allows this stage to complete. We've worked long and hard through many delays, and we're all quite happy to finally work through it all.
Mirko and his team are also feeling jubilant. With the arrival of spring, work has speeded up. And a week before deadline, they're painting their final section.
This is a first coat, a primer. We have to apply as soon as we finish the blasting. We have to apply straight away because we get if we got moisture in the air, that whatever job we do, there'll be not quality. This is a final fourth coat, and it's calling the 0.9. City Harbour Bridge, still grey. That's a special night for City Harbour Bridge.
After priming the area, they're ready to start applying undercoats 2 and 3 before the bridge's special top coat, known, yes, as Harbour Bridge Grey. Ahead of their final inspection for the year, Mirko gets out his tools.
We go down and touch up. That's all there'll be. You can see over there a bit, and the rest is very good. Yeah, put me inside there a little bit. That's it. That's 418, that's very good and very happy. 399, that's excellent. We done today spraying final coat, and I just done an inspection. That's very good, they done a very good job, nice and smooth. Very happy with the boys, very happy, done a very good job. All right, thank you, you done a good job, you done a very good job. Jeffrey, done a very good job.
Oh, I don't mind what they call me, I still do my job.
With rail renewal and paintwork completed, the pressure is now on at the traffic management centre. Their control room move, planned for 6 months, was executed like clockwork in the dead of night. So, was it all worth it?
The advantage of the new place is it's world-leading technology. We've got old new computer systems, they're a lot faster. We've got new video wall, we'll have new screens. Things will just be able to be done a lot quicker, a lot faster, be very efficient.
We've just moved down into our new office and it's fantastic.
But with the HQ move followed swiftly by breakfast on the bridge, have they bitten off more than they can chew?
Breakfast on the Bridge is coming up in a few days, and there's quite a lot to be done to have it all in place.
Meanwhile, at the bridge's famous foundations, Duncan will take his final measurements.
So, Duncan, what are you capturing from this angle?
This is one of the very important setups for the scanner, really, because it's only from here that we can see elements on the top of the decking of the bridge and also the underside of the bridge.
Combining a total of 50 separate scans, each from a different location, Duncan will be able to produce a 3D model, which can highlight any of the bridge's features close up. It'll help with ongoing maintenance, but his work has proved that the bridge, designed in an era before computers, is equal to anything that today's technology can produce. And it all started here.
We're really looking at a key component to the bridge here. If this wasn't accurately positioned and wasn't carefully constructed, then none of the rest of the bridge would have worked.
No, that's right. And, you know, any inaccuracy here would have compounded probably over the length of the bridge.
First, the foundations and arch, the bridge's joint supports, were completed. Then workers began to construct the rest of the bridge.
And the sense you get here as you get closer is the thousands of rivets that are in position. Does anyone come up with a figure as to how many there actually are in the bridge?
Look, as close as they could estimate, it's about 6 million rivets, and that's 3,500 kilos of weight.
6,000 hungry visitors about to pour onto the bridge aren't coming to see rivets. They'll want their breakfast.
TMC from India 4, can you let us know when we're right to lift this one over? So, well, we've just got to make sure that all the turf gets down by 5 a.m. Once we've got it all down by 5, we've got to get all those trucks out of there so we can then bump in all the other infrastructure that's actually sitting on top of the grass. There's still a lot to go, even though when you think you're done, you've got the turf on the bridge. It's still early in the night, so it's going to be a long night.
And the clock is ticking. As Brandon's work gets underway inside the bridge, TMC colleague Ian is buoyant.
Whenever travelling into the city, I point out to my son the Harbour Bridge, and that's my office. And I really feel special then. And that's all it takes, you know. That keeps me in this job more than probably anything.
The trucks have managed to deliver on time, and it's now over to the ground staff.
I'm nervous at the moment. Once the grass is fully down and people are walking onto the bridge, I should calm down a little, get myself a bit of loaf of bread from on the bridge and sit down and have something to eat for breakfast.
Let's hope they're ready, because the guests are arriving. Overnight, Brandon and his crew have managed to divert traffic, turf the bridge, set up 50 toilets and dozens of waste bins. It's been a giant team effort. While Vic watches from high up. At their new headquarters, Tom and Steve are keeping an eagle eye on the roads.
People walk over it, people walk under it, people just want to do everything on the Harbour Bridge. I love everything about my job. I get to work on the Harbour Bridge on events when everybody else is trying to get tickets to get onto it.
We celebrate our bridge. Other parts of the world, they may have the Champs-Élysées. We've got the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
We're in love with this bridge.
Yeah.
It's one of the best things ever happened in this planet.
Yeah.
Harbour Bridge means a lot to me and a lot to my wife, I suppose, because I proposed underneath the Harbour Bridge 4 months ago. And we had our wedding 3 weeks ago, right underneath the Harbour Bridge as well.
I just think it's a symbol of how amazing Sydney is and how beautiful the harbour is.
It's our identity.
Typical of the bridge, Sydney went bum.
No, down under.